This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The Florida Repertory Theater here in Fort Myers will open its 2018-2019 season with the comedic play Becoming Dr. Ruth next Friday, September 21st. From playwright Mark St. Germain, this biographical play explores the remarkable life of renowned psychosexual therapist Dr. Ruth Westheimer, who is perhaps best known for her pioneering work to foster frank and open discussions about sexual matters, beginning with the now iconic radio program Sexually Speaking, which launched 38 years ago this month. That show served as a springboard for a decades-long career for Dr. Ruth, providing advice and answering caller questions about sex and relationship issues through nationally and internationally syndicated radio and television programs. Her expertise has also been included in newspapers, games, home videos, computer software, and the 44 books Dr. Ruth has authored. Later in today's show, we'll be joined in studio by the director of the Florida Rep's production of Becoming Dr. Ruth, as well as the actress playing the role of Dr. Ruth. And the Florida Rep's Jason Parrish joins us as well for a broader look at the theater company's offerings throughout the upcoming season. But first, Dr. Ruth Westheimer herself will be traveling to Southwest Florida next week to attend the premiere of this play about her life. I recently caught up with Dr. Ruth, now 90 years old, from her home in New York. Our conversation explores her escape from Germany as a child ahead of World War II, her work for Planned Parenthood after immigrating to the U.S., the importance of sex education and sexual literacy, as well as her thoughts on topics like pornography and the Me Too movement, and much, much more. Let's hear that conversation now. First of all, since we're talking to you before you come down to our neck of the woods to see this play about your life, I know you've seen productions of the play before, so I'm wondering what's prompting you to make the trip down to Southwest Florida to see the Florida Repertory Theater's production.
All right. First of all, I've been going to many of the performances. I'm very grateful it's going to Fort Myers. And I could see on my calendar that I can do it and that they can fly me down. So I'm coming to do a talkback. I like to do that. And the actresses like to do that. And I'm going to have dinner with the theater people the night before. So we are going to have a good time.
And did Mark St. Germain, the playwright, contact you or spend much time speaking with you to, you know, get a firsthand account of the person he was writing this play about?
Of course. First he came and I said, no, thank you. There's already enough about me. And then when he said, I won't do anything that you would not like, and then I liked him at that very first meeting, and I said, he came to my house, and I went right away and got my autobiography and got some other books. And he said, so are we doing it? I said, sure. So now I'm very happy that we did it. And it's very interesting for me because right now they also did a documentary about me, which is going to go to a film festival, but we don't have any details yet. But it's wonderful for me that at the age of 90, I have a theater, and now I'm going to have, in the next couple of months, a documentary. So it was very nice to be Dr. Ruth.
Yes, yes. Well, and no surprise that folks are so interested in telling your story. I wanted to go back to your early years, you know, in 1939, being sent to that children's home in Switzerland and, you know, just escaping before the outbreak of World War II. Take us back to that time. Tell us what your life was like and then how, as a teenager, you came to...
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family. In Frankfurt, I went to a very good school. I was an only child, and I went to the synagogue. And then when, in 1938, when they picked up my father, there were no concentration camps yet, but there was labor camps. And then my father wrote a postcard to Frankfurt that I have to join the Kindertransport, the group of children to Switzerland, so that he could come back to Frankfurt. So I had no choice. And one of the reasons I just did now a children's book called Rollercoaster Grammar, where I'm talking about that, a graphic novel, children from about 8 through 12, because, and then the later part is I, at the grammar, I go to an amusement park. We get, with two of my four grandchildren, we get measured. They can go on the ride, and I'm too short. So the, one of the reasons I did the, I agreed with Marc Saint-Germain to do the play, and now also the documentary and the book, is because there are people who deny the Holocaust, as you know, and then there are also people who have, like, Holocaust fatigue, who say, oh, stop already talking about it. And I'm on the board of the Museum of Jewish Heritage, a living memorial to the Holocaust, and we cannot forget about those bad times.
Yeah,
so the play is wonderful, and the play talks about also about my late husband. And it's funny because in the Jewish tradition, John, it says that a lesson taught with humor is a lesson retained. So the play is like sad and also with a lot of humor. So I'm very happy with it.
And one of your latest documentaries included the accompanying book, The Unknown Face of Islam, and it really highlights this unique community whose origins, you know, come from the mountains of Caucasia, folks who are proud Israelis and also proud Muslims. And I'm wondering what prompted you to tackle this subject and if it relates back to...
I did a couple of documentaries in Israel, one on the Druze, one on the Bedouin, and one on the one that you're mentioning right now is on the Tcherkessim. And I go to Israel every single year, and in order not just to sit and talk to all my friends and to be at a, in that wonderful, beautiful country that I thought that I would be for my whole life, but it didn't turn out that way. So I was very interested in all of the minorities that have freedom to keep their religion and their way of life in a modern state of Israel. So I'm very happy. My students at Columbia University's Teachers College see those films every semester. I just was told yesterday that I'm teaching the course again, and they're writing me their impressions of the films and of the little books that accompany each film, which is very instructive for me. I learned something new, and also the films, and the topic is of interest. So I have something to contribute to the academic world.
Well, I wanted to go back.
The book that I did now is called, the latest is called, it's an Amazon book. It's The Doctor Is In. And it talks about my life. It also talks about the joie de vivre, which means zest for life. And it's out in paperback. And I'm sure that people who go and see the play might be also interested in that. And it's out in paperback, so it's cheap.
All right. Well, I wanted to go back to your time, you know, working with Planned Parenthood, which as I understand, kind of prompted you to further your education in human sexuality. Tell me about your work with Planned Parenthood and what you were doing.
I ran a project for Planned Parenthood of training paraprofessionals to be family planning counselors. And when I did that project and used it for my doctoral dissertation, and then I realized that I didn't know enough. That prompted me to look for a program to, I already had a degree in psychology, I had a master's in sociology. That prompted, and now I had a doctorate in the study of the family, and that prompted me to look for a program to be trained as a sex therapist. I was very fortunate because I got accepted at Cornell Medical School in a program led by Dr. Helen Singer Kaplan, who was like the originator with her book, The New Sex Therapy, of sex therapy. And I worked with her for 5 years, 2 years twice a week being trained, and then I stayed 3 more years to train others. So I had the nice combination of the academic and the clinical. That helped me a great deal.
Yeah, that background really paved the way for you to be, you know, doing what you, I think you first became really famous for.
Right.
You know,
the radio station.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you radio people were important. I did WYNY, NBC Radio, for 10 years, every Sunday night from 10 to 12, and called Sexually Speaking, and with Dr. Ruth Westheimer, and we answered questions. And I've had a very good run. Then I did 450 television shows on Lifetime Television when cable just started. And now they are talking about the new television, but I can't talk about it yet because it's not signed. But it's happening.
Wow. And over all these years, taking, you know, listener and viewer questions, yes. What's the most common question or type of question that you get? And has it changed over the years?
Right. John, they fall into two categories, relationship questions and specific sexual questions. I still get a lot of questions of boredom in the bedroom and... it's very nice. I go any place I go in the country, but especially in New York, I find people who say, you helped me with my relationship, and you helped me with my sex life. Very nice. Then I also was one of the first ones, not the only one, to talk about AIDS. And to talk about the importance of safer sex and using condoms. So I've had a nice combination of experiences, and it's still going on. I'm not retiring. Sherry Lansing used the sentence I use every day, do not retire, rewire.
Of course.
Will you be at the performance?
I plan to, yes. I can't wait to meet you in person.
Will you say hello to me?
Of course.
Okay.
And I wanted to just tell you a little bit about my own experience. I think the best sex education I had was in middle school in my adolescent years. We had this woman they called the sex lady, and she would just come and talk to our class, and she spoke very frankly. She wasn't one of our regular classroom teachers, so we felt comfortable asking her questions we wouldn't ask a teacher or our own parents.
Right, and in the classroom I always said what you ought to do is put a shoebox and let the students put questions in there without names.
Mm-hmm. I noticed some of my classmates at that time, you know, their parents would have their kids taken out of those sessions. And I'm wondering what you think regarding...
Yeah, I tell you what I think, that especially these days, we have no choice. First of all, girls menstruate at an earlier and earlier age. We have to teach girls and boys not only about menstruation, but also about nocturnal emission. We have to teach them that it's okay to touch themselves, but not to let anybody else touch. And what teachers have to do is to have a seminar in the evenings when parents can come and teachers can explain what they are going to teach their children. So that it's not something that is like a surprise.
Right. Or they're not just getting bad information from their peers.
Right, exactly.
Now,
and stories, right.
Now, obviously, I have no formal training in psychology or human sexuality, but in recent years, I've been fascinated by books like there's one in particular called Sex at Dawn, The Prehistoric Origins of Modern Sexuality. And the authors really challenge the standard narrative of human sexual evolution, and they contend that...
I don't know the book.
Okay.
But what I don't know, I'm a very honest person. That's why I'm so successful, because... I never embarrassed to say I don't know.
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, just real briefly, they kind of purport the idea that some of the problems people have with relationships and intimacy today, like infidelity, they say it stems from trying to adhere to social constructs that defy our very biology. And I'm wondering what you think about that idea.
I would have to read the book, and I would have to know more. In order to comment.
Sure.
So next question.
Okay. and I'm wondering if you've noticed maybe in recent years maybe a frustrating backstepping when it comes to our ability to speak frankly and openly about sex and intimacy.
But I tell you what I tell those people, that we have no choice. We don't want to see a rise in sexually transmitted diseases. And we have no choice to talk to people of all ages, also for older people, to be careful and not to engage in indiscriminate sexual activity. And I'm also very concerned these days about loneliness. There are people who are very lonely, and I talk a lot about that.
Mm.
So I hope that I can see you when I come to Fort Myers. Make sure that you introduce yourself.
I will. I wanted to ask what you think about pornography. Is that something that can be part of a healthy sex life, or given how...
Anything that is sexually explicit, like those films or 50 Shades of Grey, I'm all for if it helps people to be sexually aroused. But the danger with pornography is that it shows unrealistic, it shows men endowed with tremendous physical power. And in reality, that's not what's happening. So if people use pornography in order to get aroused, I have no problem. If they know that it's... That it's not reality.
Well, and
I believe in people keeping their 2 feet on the ground.
Right. Yeah. Well, on that.
I also believe that, for example, 50 Shades of Grey. Mm. I haven't seen the movie, but the books I read proves the point that I've been making all of these years, that women do get aroused by sexually explicit material. And if they can get aroused with that, wonderful, use it. But don't think that that's reality.
Right, and create unreasonable expectations.
Right.
Well, on that subject of power, you've actually published a book called Power, the Ultimate Aphrodisiac.
Well, you really did your homework. I'm very impressed, John. I did it with Jerry Singerman from the University of Pennsylvania, and it's stories from the olden days, mythology, and to show how much they knew about sexuality and how arousing they can be to learn about them. I also did a book called The Art of Arousal with Gary Tintero. At the time, he was at the Metropolitan Museum. Now he's in Houston, the director of the museum, and it's a beautiful art book. It was translated into French. We did a book signing at the Louvre in Paris, and it's called The Art of Arousal, taking pictures and looking at them in terms of their possibility of sexual arousal. You should look into that, since you did your homework so well.
I will.
The Art of Arousal.
Art of Arousal. I wanted to get your take on
the guy's name is Gary Tintel.
Tintel, okay. What is your take on the Me Too movement when it comes to...
I'm very worried about that because I'm worried about it won't be possible for somebody at your radio station to tell your client, your co-worker, woman, oh, how nice you look today, or your dress is nice. So what we have to do, look, I'm not talking about rape. Anybody who gets forced into something, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in everyday life, what we have to do, everybody has to have like a conversation so that people don't feel that they are being used or abused. And I'm a little worried about the direction that it has taken, because people are going to be worrying of talking to the opposite sex. But I also think, I'm not talking about people who are forcefully, who were forced.
Sure.
I'm talking about people who misread the intention.
Right, right.
So every place, every radio station, every place has to have like a seminar of discussing what is appropriate and what is not appropriate.
Well, it's just like what you've been doing for years, having those frank discussions in an open forum. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm a little worried of the dimensions that it took now. So that worries me a little. So I would suggest that every place should have one session like that of discussing what is appropriate and what is not appropriate.
Right.
And I'm old-fashioned in the square. I don't want women to walk around half-naked except at the beach.
Okay.
You can tell that to your listeners.
Well, they'll hear it. So,
because it is sexually arousing, and I don't want to hear more about problems. So important to have that communication. I want to tell you something else, John.
Yes.
Where you radio people can be very helpful. What is being lost these days is the art of conversation. These days, everybody's on their phone. Some people get addicted to those phones, as you know. And we are going to have a real problem because people are going to not know how to have a conversation. So that's why you radio people are important. I want your listeners to say, did you hear what John discussed with Dr. Rose?
Hey, I completely agree with you. I make my life having conversations, or make my living.
Yeah, exactly. You too. And I want to make sure that you are going to see me, okay?
Oh, yes. Well, on that subject of... you know, the art of conversations and meeting people, finding a partner. I've heard you in other interviews discourage people from going to maybe try and meet somebody at like a bar. Why is that?
I'm not saying not to go to a bar, but I'm also saying be careful. I'm saying I want people to meet. I don't want them to sit home and watch television or listen to radio and be lonely. But I need them not to be drunk. I don't talk about people who drink too much, but I need them to be aware of going someplace where there is a common interest, even watching a football game together and starting a conversation with a person next to you, but to be careful.
And a final question for you, Dr. Yeah. Ruth. How important is sex to a healthy, well-rounded life at any age?
Very important. Now, if somebody says to me, I'm not interested in it anymore, I say, that's okay, it's your choice. And then I say, at least remember the good times you had. So I'm not saying that people have to be sexually active, but I'm saying it's possible to be sexually active and to learn what is possible and what is realistic. That's why I did one book, called Sex Over 50, because there is a lot to be taught about older people having sex and touching and older people should have sex in the morning, not at night when they are tired. So there is a lot of good information around, not just my books. There are lots of books on sex that people should become sexually literate, like John on his radio station.
Okay. Well, Dr. Ruth Westheimer, I have enjoyed this so much. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I can't wait to meet you.
Okay, you'll meet me. Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was WGCU's recent conversation with renowned psychosexual therapist and sex and relationship advice icon, Dr. Ruth Westheimer. She'll be traveling to Southwest Florida next week to attend the premiere of the Florida Repertory Theater's season opening production of the comedic biography, Becoming Dr. Ruth. We're taking a short break, but when we return, I'll be joined in studio by the director of the Florida Rep season opening production, as well as the actress taking on the role of Dr. Ruth. We'll also be taking a broader look at the Florida Rep's offerings all throughout the upcoming 2018-2019 season. That's just ahead. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. Stay with us. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. We just heard a conversation with renowned psychosexual therapist and sex and relationship advice icon Dr. Ruth Westheimer ahead of her visit to Southwest Florida next week to attend the premiere of the Florida Repertory Theater's production of the comedic biography about her life, Becoming Dr. Ruth. For the remainder of the hour, we'll be exploring this opening production for the Florida Rep's upcoming theater season with Chris Clavelli. He's the Associate Artistic Director at the Florida Rep, where he has directed and performed in more than 40 productions, and he's directing the upcoming production of Becoming Dr. Ruth, which opens next Friday, September 21st. His theater credits have taken him across the country. He was a founding member of the co-artistic director of the Neighborhood Theater for Kids in Brooklyn. He's also a recipient of the Barry Moore Award and the South Florida Carbonelli for Best Actor. His one-man play, A Little More Than You Wanted to Spend, ran recently at the Drilling Company in New York City. In 2012, he was named Best Actor of the Year by the Florida Weekly, and he currently serves as the classical acting division of the Actors Studio Drama School at Pace University. Chris, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're also joined in studio by actress Susan Greenhill, who is making her debut with the Florida Rep in her role as Dr. Ruth. And this won't be the first time she's taken on the role of Dr. Ruth. She's done so previously in productions with the Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota and the Kravis Center in West Palm. She was also in Crimes of the Heart on Broadway and has performed in many award-winning productions with numerous other companies, including Playwrights Horizons, Primary Stages, Actors Studio Theater, and Urban Stages, among others. Her television and film credits include roles in The Good Wife, Law and Order, The Chappelle Show, Clarissa Explains It All, Guiding Light, and this may be a bigger deal to me than to Susan, given the breadth of her work, but she also has a voice credit in my all-time favorite John Waters film, Pecker. Susan Greenhill, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And we're also welcoming back to the studio Jason Parrish, who is entering his 14th season with the Florida Rep, where he serves as interim artistic director. Jason has also acted and directed in a broad scope of theater productions with the company. Jason, always great to speak with you.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
And as always, listeners are invited to join our conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. Jason, I wanted to begin with you. How did the Florida Rec come to settle on choosing Becoming Dr. Ruth to open this season?
Well, Mark St. Germain, who wrote the play, is now a good friend of Florida Rep's. We actually premiered a new play of his to close the previous season in May. So we had Mark with us for a few weeks as we opened his play, George Washington's Teeth. At that point, we had already selected doing Becoming Dr. Ruth. Chris came to us and said, this play was on our radar. Mark St. Germain is someone whose work we've done before, Best of Enemies. We opened our renovated studio with Camping with Henry and Tom by Mark. And so this play has been in sort of our collective conscious for a while. And Chris came to me and said, I know this wonderful actress. And so That was months and months ago. But so we settled on it because it's a one person show that fits well into the opening part of the season and tells a story that not many people know about her background. It's funny, it's heartwarming, it's moving, and it's incredibly powerful.
Chris, what moved you about this production? Why did you want to bring this to the Florida Rep?
A lot of the same things that Jason talked about. Susan Greenhill, right here, I'm saying her full name again. She and I did Sideman together at the Philadelphia Theater Company, where we both got the Barrymore, I should say. That's right. We're Barrymore together. Yes. And I fell in love with Susan and her acting. And I just, when I found out about this show, I went to Jason and I said, I think we've got a package here that could be really thrilling because I wanted to get in a rehearsal studio with Susan. And I thought this is a perfect possibility for us at the company.
Susan Greenhill, did you jump at the chance to reprise this role? What attracts you to it?
I did. Yeah. And especially here, and especially with Chris, to collaborate with him. It had been a couple years since I'd done it. It's a completely different setup, much more intimate. And I knew he would be able to guide me and to rediscover different things and bring it to life, and so it's just been an incredible journey. And I think a lot of what Dr. Ruth has to say and what she's gone through, unfortunately, still has repercussions today.
Yeah. Is there an added level of pressure as an actor when the person you're portraying
is sitting there?
I was going to say a real person, not a fictional character. But yes, on top of that, actually watching
sitting there, yes. And I have to say that in the past when Dr. Ruth has come, it was a large theater and she was very considerate and just kind of snuck in, you know, a minute or two before. But there's no chance of that in this theater. So it's a little different. And somebody asked me how I would feel, and I went, well, we'll see.
Okay. I believe she's sitting right in the middle as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. And I'm grateful that Florida Repertory has, and I've been here and I've seen their shows because my husband has worked here.
Oh.
So then to come here and be the cast is a gift.
I'm kind of getting the impression that this production is going to be physically in smaller scale than, say, what the Florida Rep would do putting on a musical. It's going to be more intimate.
Well, in our studio theater, the Art Stage, we're able to do more intimate work. So if you've come to the Art Stage before, it will feel like any other play you've seen in that space, in that you're right on top of the action. The exciting thing for the Art Stage this year is that you'll see it in so many different configurations and with Dr. Ruth will use projections in that space in a way we haven't really ever done before. So that'll be an exciting sort of thing. As she talks, the play has a few images that are supposed to roll with, and we've expanded that with our projections designer and lighting designer Rob Seiler and with Chris.
Susan, can you give us some insights into how you've prepared for this role? Because I'm just thinking with all that audio and video that's out there, like perfecting the accent.
Yes, you know. I have. I'm very grateful to all that's out there. And it has Dr. Ruth also at different ages and different stages. So whereas I'm playing her at 69, she sounds different than in some ways than she does at 90.
That's a really great point. I mean, that first radio show started 38 years ago this month. So she's been – oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Well, ahead of next week's opening of the Florida Repertory Theater's production of Becoming Dr. Ruth, we're taking a closer look at the production and all that's going to be coming to the theater season at the Florida Rep this season. Listeners can take part in our conversation. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And I've not yet had the pleasure of seeing the play. So without giving too much away, can you tell us a bit, Chris, about the scope of Dr. Ruth's life that the play covers? Does it go all the way back to her childhood? Or?
Yeah, she was a 10-year-old orphan, actually. She grew up in Frankfurt, Germany. And as she said earlier in your piece, that she was taken away on the Kinder transport. Only a couple of hundred Jewish kids got to go to Switzerland.
Yeah.
And she was one of them. And from there, she fell in love and, you know, she moved all over the world. She moved to what was Palestine at that point, Israel. And then she moved to France, to Paris, to study at the Sorbonne there. And then she comes to America and makes her way. So, I mean, her journey's incredible. And you think of her in one way. And then when you come to see this play, you're going to find a breadth of a life that's really kind of amazing. And she personifies a spirit. She says in the play, my job is to make people feel better and happy because that's what her grandparents and parents taught her to do, to love life and take care of people. And that's exactly what her mission has been all her life. But if you consider what she came from in terms of the Holocaust and of an orphan at 10, it's a more remarkable story than I've ever thought of.
Yeah.
We don't know that part of her heroic nature.
Yeah. And this question is really open to any of you who want to weigh in here. But do you feel like putting on this production is, in a way, in homage, expressing gratitude to Dr. Ruth? And by that, I mean, you know, I can't help thinking of parallels between what you all do and what she does. Just as Dr. Ruth has devoted her career to getting people to open up and have frank discussions about, you know, sex and relationships and intimacy, theater is often utilized as a tool to start conversations about, you know, controversial or risque topics or, you know, challenging the audience to think about an issue from a different perspective.
We're calling this season theater that moves us. Yeah. And so we have a whole slate of plays that move us to laughter, move us to tears, and that may move us forward as well. So, yeah, that is definitely part of our greater goal in this community is to entertain, certainly, but also to ask questions and to start conversations. Often – the second or third act of a play is the conversation you have after this play. And this play is entertaining on its surface, but the journey that you take with her is something that I didn't expect in reading the play. And watching it the other day certainly was rapt as I sat and watched Susan go through this moment of momentary crisis that she's in. So, yeah, it's very important.
Yeah. It's I can't wait for the talk back. I'm thrilled by the idea of her being there to talk to our audience because she does open up your idea about what sex and spirit connection can be in a way that, you know, if your life you don't want to talk. Most people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, knowing that Mark St. Germain, as we heard Dr. Ruth herself say, you know, met with her before he started writing the play.
Yes.
Are there lines from the play that we know are like direct quotes from her, either from their conversations?
Yes.
Or? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can't go through with, but it was a process. She met with him more than once.
Right.
He would show her what he was writing and working on. And so it was. I feel collaborative.
Yeah, yeah.
In that way.
Well, and like she had just said, he told her, like, I won't do anything that you don't approve. So
mm-hmm.
It's, yeah.
And this is – Mark St. Germain has made a name for himself in the theater writing biographical plays that are based on history with Camping with Henry and Tom, Freud's Last Session, which is one recent one. She's in good hands with Mark.
Mm-hmm. It's a terrifically written play. I mean, the more we rehearse it, it reveals itself to us in the rehearsal studio, and it's thrilling. I mean, when you have a good piece of writing like that behind you and this wonderful story, it's a terrific night in the theater. It really is going to be.
I'm looking forward
and
to
it. It's a gift for me to be able to revisit it, you know, in ways I've changed or in ways the world has changed, and to have this new space and energy and creative team and –
Yeah. Well, and Susan, this being a one-woman show, what do you see as like the benefits, but also the downsides of, you know, really carrying the actual stage acting yourself as opposed to working with an ensemble cast?
Well, if something happens unexpected or you go up, there's just you, there's nobody to help you. It's not like I can turn to my other actor and go, excuse me, I can't remember what comes next, you know. I am the person. So you come up with little things to help yourself out and to and that's with any one person show,
right, you know?
But and then I have to hope that the actor is the actress is interesting, because I am stuck with me.
Yeah. Right.
She is. I think she's interesting.
Yeah. And I'm extremely fortunate that the script is so good and that for the most part the audience doesn't know it except for Dr. Wood.
Right.
And Chris and Jason
Well, this is kind of a little bit of a side topic here, but I was surprised in preparing for this show when I came across your website and found you have this therapeutic certification in biotransformational energetics. And if you'd feel comfortable talking about that aspect of your life, could you tell us maybe just what biotransformational energetics is?
It is a form of therapy that uses, regular therapy and the arts to create change. And my specialty was in body image issues, eating disorders, things like that, for women. And it was at the time I started as a not as a therapist, as a I went for help. It was called bioenergetics. And it helped me in so many ways that I went on to train and become certified and then have led and lead groups in women on body image issues, whatever that means to them.
Do you see parallels between this role you're playing now and that therapy work?
Well, it is interesting.
Yeah.
It is very, very interesting for me and part of it. And as I said, years ago, I had done Dr. Ruth's show way before any of this ever happened. But who knows what seed was planted in there. But it is of so much value to me. And I'm sure has influenced my work in that area in different ways.
Very interesting. I would love to ask you questions about that for next hour.
Next time.
Yes. But also, I want to look a little bit into the future here as well. So, Jason, tell us a bit more about what we're going to be seeing this season. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit because I know you all are really excited about this premiere adaptation of A Christmas Carol. So maybe we should start there.
I will give you some highlights. Mm-hmm. And A Christmas Carol is definitely one of them. It is a brand new adaptation of the Dickens play by Mark Shanahan, who's a Broadway actor, director, and has worked with us before. So it's many actors, a few actors playing many roles. We're having some music written for it. It's not a musical, but it has music. There is a in the cast are 10 young people from around the community, specifically from our education program. So it's going to feel like and be an epic event, a holiday event of this season, and it's an incredibly loving adaptation of the script, and really has so much laughter, and it's full of heart, and it's irreverent and funny, but at the center of it is Ebenezer Scrooge's redemption, his journey from beginning to end is just really thrilling. So you don't want to miss that. And also, we're very excited about August Wilson's Fences, which is the first of August Wilson's plays that Florida Rep has produced. And we're very excited to dig into the August Wilson American Century cycle with this really remarkable Pulitzer Prize-winning and Tony-winning play with a remarkable cast. Many of the cast members have been on Broadway in recent August Wilson productions. one of our actors understudied the Denzel Washington production, and a couple of them were just in Jitney. And we saw so many tremendous people in New York, and I'm so excited about this cast. It will be electrifying.
Yeah, between what you're doing now and you know what I've noticed the theater conspiracy
They've committed to all 10 of August Wilson's plays.
Yeah, it's so great to see audiences here in Southwest Florida have access to those.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also many comedies, Hay Fever, the Noel Coward comedy, a brand new comedy called Native Gardens to close our season. Cannot say enough about how well written and smart and very incredibly funny.
And that's going to be a one actor production as well?
That's four.
That's four.
Four
okay.
actors plus some others. But yeah, that's a four person's play.
All right.
Very funny.
And coming up just on the heels of becoming Dr. Ruth is, of course, the classic Steel Magnolias.
Yes.
And my roommate actually just caught me watching the film adaptation last week, so I will be there for that one.
We'll see you there, John.
Yes.
It's going to be – with Dr. Ruth and Steel Magnolias, I think it's a 1-2 punch of two really great plays that center on very strong women to kick off our season. And we're very excited about that.
And we're going to be treated to productions of Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical about her rise to stardom. What can you tell us about that show and maybe just generally what more goes into putting on a musical? I mean, I just imagine you've got this much larger cast.
Well, no, actually, with Tenderly, it's two.
Really?
Yeah. So Tenderly it's in our studio space again. And we've spent a couple of years saluting great American composers. Cole Porter most recently. And so this year, instead of doing that, we are saluting one of the great voices in the American musical canon, and that's Rosemary Clooney. And this play, it's a two-person play. It's not just a review. It's not just her singing songs the whole time. But it takes place – she had a breakdown in the late 60s and dealt with some substance abuse and some mental health issues. And so she checked herself into a hospital, which is where this play picks up. And so her doctor – ends up becoming all of the other characters in her life, her mother, her sister, her husband, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra. He plays all of these characters back to back. He'll, you know, in one page he plays six different people. And you sort of get a picture of her career and how rock and roll led to sort of the decline of Rosemary Clooney and the kind of music she was singing. And we're running Million Dollar Quartet right at the same time, which talks about the rise of rock and roll. And then it also brings back to it brings us back to her career and how she became a famous jazz singer later in her life. It's a really excellent play and full of all of the music you can imagine it would be.
All right. And I think maybe the only one we haven't talked about in much detail yet is Hay Fever.
Yes. Hay Fever is a comedy of bad manners, we call it.
Okay.
It's Noel Coward at his driest and wittiest. And it centers on a very eccentric family, the Bliss family, in the 1920s in a country house in England. And each of them, by accident, invites a different guest or suitor for the weekend. And the weekend devolves and the guests try to sneak out by the end because they're too much to take. It's very, very funny. Right. Don't want to miss that.
And the psychological thriller, Damascus.
Yeah, so over the past 5 years, we've taken on producing new works, and this play came out of our new play festival, the Playlab Festival, and Damascus is truly a psychological thriller that turns all of the assumptions you make about other people on their heads, and it's in our studio space in a configuration you've never seen before. There's a van. It takes place mostly in a shuttle van, and so there are a lot of projections and ways that we make that exciting.
Are you going to be somehow bringing an actual van into the theater?
There will be pieces of an actual van into the theater.
So
that'll be a very interesting scenic play for you to see, in addition to just being – you're going to feel like you've been in that van with them by the end of it. It is a journey. It's a really wonderful play.
Interesting, interesting. Well, that is about all the time we do have for today's show, but I want to thank my guest, Jason Parrish. He's interim artistic director and an actor with the Florida Repertory Theater. Thanks, as always, for your time, Jason.
Thank you, John.
And we've also been speaking with actress Susan Greenhill, who is making her debut with the Florida Rep in Becoming Dr. Ruth, which again opens next Friday, September 21st. Susan, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Chris Clavelli is directing the show. He's Associate Artistic Director with the Florida Rep. And great to speak with you as well, Chris.
Thank you so much.
The Florida Repertory Theater's production of Becoming Dr. Ruth runs from September 21st, that's next Friday, through October 21st. Dr. Ruth Westheimer herself plans to attend the opening night production. To find out more about the Florida Rep, to secure your tickets, or just to explore all the theater company has to offer in the upcoming 2018-2019 season, visit floridarep.org. I also want to thank the Florida Rep's Brendan Powers for all of his work in securing our interview with the Top of the Hour with Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Thank you so much, Brendan. I owe you a debt of gratitude. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.